is the Pick Six Podcast. I'm Sam McEwen along with Chris Hetty and Evan Bland. Gentlemen, how are you?
Hey, Sam. Doing well. How's vacation going?
It was good. So, well, we went somewhere and now we're back. And then I'll like technically come back on Monday, but we went to Mount Rushmore and the Black Hills, and it was lovely. It was beautiful up there. Perfect weather every day. We missed the giant squall line of storms that came through Lincoln, I guess, Wednesday night. And right about the time we were driving back to the Corn Palace in Mitchell is when the Big Ten announced that it was going to go to a conference-only schedule, really for all sports in the fall. And there's still some TBD on how you're going to do that with cross-country and golf, because golf technically has some meets in the fall. I don't know what they're going to do or how they're going to do it exactly. You could see, I don't know, we'll figure that out. But we'll focus primarily on football and sort of the scuttlebutt that's been going around over the last, 36 to 72 hours about going to a 10-game schedule for the Big Ten. It may be 10, it may be 12, we don't really know exactly yet, but we'll kind of go through that. You guys covered it really well yesterday for the World Herald on multiple fronts. And then we'll talk a little recruiting. We still have that rolling, going on, and then we'll get over to the interesting situation going on with the coronavirus pandemic and some members of the Nebraska basketball team, and technically some members of the women's basketball team too. So we'll kind of see where everything's at there, but we'll obviously talk a lot about football. Not a lot of preamble here. I could talk for a while about the vacation, but I'm not going to do that because important things to get to. i.e. Big Ten football, lots of area to cover. Want to remind everybody that our sponsor is the Schwalbach Agency. Team Schwalbach is a family-owned all-state insurance agency with floor-licensed insurance pros saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans money. They sell homeowner, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska, and they also insure all the big boy toys. I saw a lot of motorcycles this week in South Dakota, a lot. Oh, boy. And it's actually quite a good atmosphere for it because of the winding roads. Boats, saw a lot of RVs too, and of course off-road vehicles. You want to make sure that you stay safe on off-road vehicles during this time of year, but the Schwalbach Agency does insure them. If you've had a roof replaced in the last 5 years, give Daryl Schwalbach, Kyle Schwalbach, Nancy Mossick, or Kyle Murdoch the call at 402-590-5200. They can help you save a bundle. We're kind of going into tornado season, but more importantly, we're going into hail season. And so hail can happen all summer long, and you can really get battered around by it. The free no-obligation insurance reviews and quotes lets make sure that all of the Nebraska fans are properly protected. You can contact the Schwalbach Agency at 402-590-5200. That's 402-590-5200, or www.nebraskaallstate.com. Thank you to Team Schwalbach, the Schwalbach Agency. Okay, so yesterday, Thursday afternoon, we're talking on a Friday morning, the Big Ten announced that it was going to be contracting its fall sports schedule to include only conference teams. The three biggest sports affected by this are soccer, volleyball, and football. And we'll talk maybe a little bit about volleyball and soccer in a minute, but we're going to focus primarily on football because, of course, that's what people care about the most. So the bottom line is that every Big Ten team has 12 regular season games. 9 of those were Big Ten games. 3 of them were non-conference games. 14 times 3, if I'm not mistaken. It's 42, right? Yeah. So 42 games have just been wiped off the schedule. They're gone. They're gone as of yesterday. Even if things dramatically improved over the next month as it relates to rising cases of the coronavirus pandemic nationwide, the Big Ten basically expunged those games yesterday. They're not going to come back. They're not going to come back hat in hand and ask for it. So those games are gone. What remains are 9 Big Ten games that each team already has scheduled, 5 home games and 4 road games for the East, and then 5 road games and 4 home games for every school in the West. I think that's accurate. If they add a 10th game, then they will even it up. It'll be 5-5. If they go to 12, then it'll go 6-6. The scuttlebutt is 10. Is 10 conference games. That would be two fewer games, obviously, than they would normally have. But at the same time, it would be more Big Ten games than they've ever had. It would be, what would it be, 70 Big Ten games, something like that? Is that accurate? Somewhere in there? I guess I don't know the math that well, but 70. There'd be 70 Big Ten games. And in the past, they'd had 63, something like that. And all of these games would be controlled by the Big Ten Network or by the Big Ten and its TV contract, right? Ohio State was, for example, visiting Oregon. Michigan, for example, was visiting with Washington. Those games were controlled by the Pac-12, right? Because those were home games for those teams. And so the two of the three biggest marquee games on the docket, is my understanding, were controlled by the Pac-12 TV contract, which might still be Fox or whatever. The third biggest game on that docket, if I'm not mistaken, was Wisconsin and Notre Dame. And I have to be honest with you, I don't know exactly who owns that game. It's at Lambeau Field. I don't know if NBC was going to control that game or not. I wish I had better information for you, but I don't. So where we stand right now, in terms of the schedule, is you've got at least 10, maybe 12. They're going to even it up because it wouldn't be fair to have an uneven number that favors the East. So at least 10, maybe 12, and that's if football is going to be played at all. And based on the comments from Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner, the new Big Ten commissioner yesterday, and the comments by Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith, which I'll get a little bit more into here in a moment, it would indicate that the Big Ten is not necessarily optimistic about there being a season at all. Mm-hmm. And so, but as it stands, there's a 10-game only list. And I'm curious what your guys' reaction was to that development yesterday, and then we'll kind of start to delve into some of the details.
Go ahead, Evan.
The timing was, I suppose, kind of what we thought it might be. I mean, like you mentioned, the scuttlebutt the last 72 hours or so was that this might be coming down. It feels like this isn't the end of the story, right? I mean, it feels like, okay, if you can knock off the three non-conference games, and that gives you some flexibility. In Nebraska's case, they were playing that first weekend in September. Then they would have those three open dates now to work with as this thing gets rescheduled. Now you have a chance to adjust, to have a makeup date or two based on potential outbreaks or things that go on. But I think it makes sense as a good first step too, because if your goal is, number one, the safety of the student athlete, then you have to establish some kind of uniform testing and uniform standards. And the only way that you can do that is to keep it all within the conference. I mean, you don't have control of that with those non-conference games. Like you mentioned with Ohio State and Michigan, you're traveling multiple time zones away, flying, staying in hotels, things like that. This allows you to play in at least something of a more controlled environment. And you know, ultimately, if the goal, you know, is economics, then you need to play these games, right? Like the thing, if money wasn't involved, was you just say no season. But if you can control the environment and actually create even more enticing television properties by, you know, adding Big Ten games to the schedule, if it could play out the way the Big Ten hopes it does, you know, it could create a safer environment and still get those finances that, as we know, fund so much within the athletic department.
Yeah, I would just echo what Evan said about, and what Kevin Warren said, which was essentially, this is the next logical step, is what he said. It's interesting to me just based on, I always wondered who the first conference was going to be that was going to do this, because somebody was going to. And there had been some murmurs that maybe all the power conferences at once were going to make the same announcement and they'd be kind of be in lockstep with each other. Clearly that didn't happen. And that doesn't surprise me because all these conferences are in competition with each other. And I don't think they usually play along extremely well together. So the Big Ten being the first one is really interesting to me because I would have put money on the SEC just based on what the SEC was saying about a month ago. And the way the SEC values football, not that the Big Ten doesn't, but not to the quite the same extent as the SEC. So I think the Big Ten being the conference that says this is what we're going to do is interesting. It also opens them up to criticism if it doesn't go well, because now all these conference commissioners are saying, well, they've put us in a bad place, and now if we don't do what they're doing, then, you know, we're left out to dry. And there's kind of this like weird tension now in the college football world where, because of what the Big Ten has done, everyone feels like they're in a weird position. And it's interesting too, Sam, as you mentioned, with Ohio State's athletic director coming out and saying, well, we don't, you know, he was cautiously optimistic that they could get 20,000 people in the stadium, and now he doesn't know for sure there's going to be a season. And even with the Big Ten's announcement, Kevin Warren himself says, we're not even sure there's going to be a season. And so there's this kind of odd notion where it's two sides, where, hey, we plan on conference only, but don't get too excited because it actually might not happen. And so that's where I think, you know, you look at the date and it's July 9th or July 10th, and yes, you have to make a decision, and yes, you have to start these wheels starting, but I was a little surprised that it was this early, because it's 2 months until football will even happen, and a lot can change in that 2 months. So it was a very, very interesting day.
So yeah, it was. There was a number of things that jumped out to me. First, Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith actually had a pretty illuminating press conference yesterday, and it was much longer than the "I'm not sure we're going to play." That was the big takeaway, because that's what the media wants to take away from it. No offense, it's true. I'm in it. So everybody kind of figured that that would be the big takeaway, but Smith kind of laid out some of the reasons why they did the conference only thing, and they dovetail with the reasons that I think they probably went to it. First of all, you have to remember that the organizing principle of the Big Ten Conference is sort of all for one, one for all, but there's a couple that are a little bit more important than the all, and that's Michigan and Ohio State. And the prospect of a Michigan-Ohio State football game not being played because it was scheduled for November 23rd is not something that I think the Big Ten was going to allow to happen. In other words, we don't really know how the virus is going to behave in the fall. The amateur epidemiologists that we are, including and other people who aren't amateurs, thought that the virus may wane in the summer. That didn't happen. It's only picked up speed. So we don't know if the virus is going to behave the same way that the flu virus might in October. You know, one of the things that seems to be true, just based on the latest conversations and the latest stories and research that's out there, is it is more likely that the virus is contracted through aerosols that linger in the air, which we kind of knew 2 months ago, but now they're repackaging it as airborne. But that it can, you know, it lingers in the air, and it may not necessarily be contracted via surfaces. Well, the heat or the lack thereof may or may not play as much of a factor. We just don't know at this point. It's possible that if there was more of a mask mandate, that the virus count could go down even in the winter. They're still learning a great deal about the virus, including whether or not they can get a vaccine by Christmas or by January or February. We don't really know. That's not a panacea either. So that's one thing, is that they wanted to make sure that the prime juice of their television contract wasn't buried in October or November and could be brought up pretty quickly to September if it had to be. And my suspicion is those games are going to be pretty prominent in September. So Michigan, Ohio State is going to be prominent in September. It's not going to be a November 3rd game, because they don't know if they're going to be able to get it. Penn State, Michigan was October 3rd. I could see that game getting moved up. Michigan, Michigan State was October 10th. I could see that game getting also moved up. Penn State's football schedule, if you look at that, their game against Ohio State was going to be October 24th. I think there's a chance that game gets moved up. Likewise, Nebraska, Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota. I think there's a chance that those games leapfrog some of the games that Nebraska already has on the schedule and become the games that need to be played, whereas a game like Penn State or Ohio State, one of those is late in the season anyway, may get moved back, as deprioritized. And then you might see this other game that is getting played or not getting played, with the East, an East foe of some sort, maybe gets a priority because it's not Ohio State. Ohio State's schedule needs to be protected. It's the primary television. It's the big boy on the TV partner side. And Ohio State needs to be able to play Michigan and Penn State. It needs to be able to play its big football games. And I think that's part of what you're seeing is by going to a 10-game conference schedule and expunging the non-conference games, you're no longer wasting, a weekend or two on Ohio State-Kent State or Minnesota-Tennessee Tech. You're getting right to the games. So I think this is more about the television deal and about securing as much for the television deal than it is about safety. And I understand that there is concerns about whether or not there would be testing protocols outside the Big Ten. And there are a few schools involved in the Big Ten's non-conference schedule. The one that came up to me most readily was Tennessee Tech. Another one that came up was Monmouth, maybe Southern Illinois, or Illinois State, although I think Illinois probably would have helped with that because they would have wanted to play the game. There's a handful of schools where you're like, I don't know. Monmouth, I just don't know what kind of flexibility or money they have. But rest assured, the MAC, some of the schools in the MAC were scheduled to get $2 million from Big Ten teams. They would have found a way to test. South Dakota State would have too. It's not that cost prohibitive that you're going to give up millions of dollars to not do it. And so I do think that these universities where, you know, it's not like they just fell out of the sky last week, they would have been able to get it done. I don't think the testing protocols were necessarily the primary concern. The biggest issue, I think, is the flexibility that a schedule like this gives you to move games around the map if you have to cancel a game and then reschedule it, or you got to stop your schedule and then start it again. The Big Ten and keeping it conference only really helps with that process, and it helps prioritize the TV deal. The next question is, were the comments on Thursday really just a, we're going to do this, but this isn't going to go well, kind of moment? And I know that Gene Smith had a comment that I found a little ironic. When he says, when you look at the behavior of our country and you consider that in May we are on a downward trajectory with cases in our hospitals, we're creating opportunities for people to come back and get the care they need to be on COVID and elective surgeries and things of that nature. And now we're, if not the worst in the world, one of the worst in the world. One of the interesting things about that comment is it's my understanding that hospitals are back full bore with elective surgeries and people are in hospitals again. And so one of the issues that people had concerns about 3 months ago, I'm pretty confident that most hospitals are operating now much closer to full capacity than they were. The irony, Ben, in that comment is it really doesn't make any difference when any state outside the Big Ten footprint now does as it relates to the Big Ten football schedule. We certainly pray for those people in Florida, Texas, and Arizona and California where cases continue to spike. But what happens in Florida, Texas, California, and Arizona has no real bearing on what the Big Ten is or isn't doing. Most of the players are now back on campus in all of these sports, or they will be soon. And once they get back there, they're there. And you're traveling among Big Ten schools. And so it doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of difference what is or isn't going on in Texas or California or Florida at this point. That's the advantage that going to a Big Ten conference schedule gets you. One of the challenges, though, is that it's still one of these issues where in a vast 330 million person nation, we look at this issue as a nationwide issue and not necessarily as a localized issue. In other words, what's happening in Florida and Texas and California is happening to us. It's not happening to us, but it feels like it's happening to us. And so when Gene Smith talks about things going on around the nation, this is why I said in a column that I think a lot of people thought was kind of controversial, wear a mask. Why? Because people who run the sport will feel better if you do. Now, regardless of whether I agree with the science or not, and I'm not really talking about the science, I can tell you that the people who are running the sport and people who run states and people who run universities want masks. It will make them feel better. It will make them feel like the curve is starting to change in a positive direction. And part of being a good citizen is doing what leaders ask you to do. And that's not something that most Americans like doing, but it is part of being, a good citizen. And so that's kind of what the column was about. But I think it continues to point to if cases don't improve, then I still think it's going to be very hard for there to be a Big Ten college football season, regardless of whether those cases are drastically bad in the Big Ten footprint or not. Now, right now in Ohio, things aren't great. Right now in Illinois, things aren't great. Right now in Wisconsin, things are kind of ticking up again. In other states like Nebraska and New Jersey, things are actually quite good. New Jersey is doing very well, at relatively speaking. And so there are places where it does seem more likely than not that you could play college football in the fall. And then there are some places where it seems less likely.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say was it is a localized issue, but the problem with that, though, is the Big Ten is such a large conference in terms of
right.
size. I mean, there are 11 states, and just looking quickly, 8 of those states' cases are rising. And so it's one of those things where with non-conference, you do cut out the possibility of, you know, anything happening in Oregon or Texas or California and in Florida. Like, you basically just say, okay, here's our actual map. I think the worry from Ohio State is significantly different than Nebraska, because again, Ohio has right. been hit so much harder than, so that's why I think you have the reaction from Gene Davis as you did, and the reaction from Nebraska as you did. Nebraska's like, cool, yep, this is what we were expecting, football, let's do it, like things are going well here. And at a state like Ohio, it would make sense to say, well, here's the deal, like things are still not great here, so we need to, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm not optimistic anymore. It's essentially what he said.
Right.
So that's where it comes in too, where you've got 2 months. Like, the clock essentially is like now officially ticking, I think, because it's like, okay, you got 2 months to figure out your testing protocols. You have 2 months for all these states for cases to go down. Let's not even worry about fans yet. We 2 months starts now for the conference to feel comfortable, because there was that caveat at the very end, which was also, if things don't go well, we'll pull the plug and we don't feel bad about that. And so it's interesting. I feel like in some ways the Big Ten wants to have it both ways, where they're saying, we want to have football, but don't get mad at us. If it goes bad, then we're just going to pull out. And it's, I think, okay. part of that is because it makes sense because it's such a huge size of the country. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, you can argue about realignment and the craziness of that and what Nebraska's situation would be if it was different, if in the Big 12 and all that, but still, you know, that's why I think the reaction has been so divisive and so different on both right. sides.
It buys you time. Like you said, now the problem is not necessarily the entire country. Now the problem is the Big Ten footprint. And so we can all think back to what things were like, you know, in mid-May, and how different, you know, kind of the vibe was at that time, the outlook was, to now. And so we just don't know what it'll be like in 2 months. And so at the very least, it closes kind of that window of exposure a little bit, and it allows the schools that we discuss, primarily MAC schools and others, to move on now. Mm-hmm. You're not stringing those folks along now into, you know, August saying, man, are we even going to get this? And so they can start to act accordingly. I think that's a big deal in the larger sense of college football, because like we mentioned, I mean, some of these schools are getting millions of dollars. Now they're not. They need to know that before they can kind of move on and decide, what are we going to do with the rest of our sports mm-hmm. season? So
that's true.
I don't think, you know, while the SEC and some other conferences are still going on and saying, we're not going to make that decision, I don't know that that does those non-conference opponents any favors, because they're still going to be in the dark financially in a big way until maybe they make a decision down the road.
So do we know for sure that these schools do not have to pay these non-conference games because they did not begin? Do we know that for sure? Or, you know what I mean?
No, we don't know that. Okay. I think that's a question TBD. Now, Nebraska's paying South Dakota State and Central Michigan. The Cincinnati payout, I have to look at the contract. It's a home and home. So I don't know what Cincinnati's owed on the – I know they're supposed to give them $400,000, but that may be for travel and for other things that are – Nebraska then gets that reciprocated. I don't know that there's a payout. I think
that's the case, yeah.
To give to Cincinnati. I don't – maybe there is. I'll have to look more into that. But my sense is – Cincinnati lost out on a great game. I don't know that they lost out on a paycheck because, you know, the biggest home game they're going to have in a long time is going to be, you know, when they play Nebraska in 2025. So you know, I don't know what Cincinnati lost in this process financially. I know they lost a game. Central Michigan and South Dakota State obviously lost a lot, but, you know, it's possible that either one of those schools could recoup that with a rescheduled game. There's not going to be necessarily a lot of options for them. The only options that they're going to have are the ones that the Big Ten just forfeited, unless the Pac-12 forfeited some too. Like, you don't necessarily gain a lot of opportunities. Like, Central Michigan could go play, you know, Boston College, because Boston College lost a game. Central Michigan could, in theory, go play Oregon, unless Oregon, you know, unless the Pac-12 contracts and does the same thing. The Pac-12 seems likely to do something similar to what the Big Ten did. So it's not like there's necessarily oodles of options other than kind of playing each other, which is a tough deal. You're not going to make those schools financially whole. I'm guessing that there'll be schools that don't forget that this happened. They'll be like, you know what? The next time we come around, you're paying us 2.5 because this happened. And, you know, it hurt our bottom line significantly, and it does. And I know that there are a lot of Big Ten ADs that were just really reluctant to do that because they know what it means. Well, first of all, it's games that they don't get to win. You know, the school that's most negatively impacted by this is Indiana. There isn't any question. Indiana went from being a borderline bowl team this year to being, you know, staring down the barrel of 3-7 or 2-8.
I mean, you could say the same thing about Nebraska, though.
Oh, I mean, the Cincinnati game was a legitimately hard game. And it's very possible, Chris, that they may replace Cincinnati. So think of it this way. Take your hardest non-conference game and replace it with a Big Ten game. At this moment, I would be really surprised if Nebraska got an East opponent that was a high-level financial opponent. In other words, they've already got Ohio State and Penn State. I'm guessing they might get an Indiana or a Maryland. And then Indiana's got to come back here.
Well, Indiana did beat them last year. I mean, I'm just saying. Like, Maryland,
But those schools got school that got the rawest deal in this thing is a school like Indiana. And the reason why is, you know, as of, I don't know, 3 days ago, IU was playing Ball State, UConn, and Western Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Well, those games are gone. And so I think over the last – I'd have to look it up, but I believe – over the last however many years, Indiana was 16-1 in its non-conference games. I mean, an absurd record. So was Minnesota over, I think, the last 5 years or something like that. And maybe 15-1, maybe 15-1. And it was just an absurd record that they had, that they were enjoying in that process. And they lost all those games. And that's hard. That's a tough deal. I mean, here's what they were going to do. They were going to play Western Kentucky, Ball State, and UConn. That was going to be their non-comp. They're going to win all those games because one of those teams is horrible, and that's UConn. They would have beaten the other two. But if you look at, like, in 2019, Indiana had Ball State, Eastern Illinois, and UConn. That was even worse. Those games are gone now. Nebraska probably had two wins in Central Michigan and South Dakota State. I think Cincinnati was a full-on toss-up. And Nebraska may end up getting an opponent, you know, in the process that they like more. If they swap out Cincinnati for Maryland, they'll take that swap any day of the week. I still think, you know, I don't know. So there's a lot going on with the schedules, but I guess we'll just have to see how it goes. Chris, when you say 2 months, you know, my initial reaction is, well, it's less time than that. But technically, you know, I think it's not that far off because the Big Ten now can kind of just, you know, they don't have to worry about any other variables out there. They can just kind of roll with what they've got in-house and kind of try to figure it out from there and move games around the schedule when they have to and, you know, adjust as needed. I think if you look at the western side of the league, you're probably feeling a little better about where things are at. I know that the state of Illinois is rough, and Northwestern is close to where it's hard. University of Illinois isn't, so I don't know, you know, how much that'll affect the Illini. But yeah, I think there's I think this does give him some time to be flexible and interesting. I'm going to be most interested to see on the Nebraska front where the Iowa and Minnesota games, the Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin games go. Because those games, I suspect, are going to be moved up. And they're going to be moved into like September, early October.
I was going to say, do you, though, I mean, there's this understanding among universities that they're going to try and get kids out off of campus by November, essentially, by Thanksgiving.
By Thanksgiving.
Do you think that there's a sense that they might try and make it even start those West games essentially like end of August? Like maybe they make it even quicker? Right.
So they have week zero as an option. Smith said that yesterday. I think it's entirely possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's possible that you could see a week zero and then trying to – how many weeks are there in September? Four, right? September.
Look, one, two, three, four. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I could see them trying to knock out all the division games by October 3rd. I think that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now why is that? Now why would that be something to do? Well, when you do all the division games, you get an even split of home and away.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And you're prioritizing your bigger games in the event that an outbreak occurs again and you can't play. You know, if Nebraska can't play Maryland in late October, but they've gotten it, Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, you're better with that.
And right. To Sam's earlier point about TV, if you have, like, imagine one of the first weekends, all of these big rivalry games or all these big division games fall on the same weekend or within 2 weekends, and then you've got all this attention on college. I mean, you get Nebraska, Iowa, and Ohio State, Michigan, and like all these games right in a row on the same weekend. That's gonna get you some money, and you get it out of the way so that people can feel like they at least saw that game. You know what I mean? Like even if there's only 6 games because it gets canceled, they can be like, well, at least we saw, you know, Nebraska, Iowa, or you know, at least this, you know, Michigan finally beat Ohio State or whatever.
What week will Ohio State Michigan be? Week 3?
I bet you they'll probably try and do it pretty early. Don't you think?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yes.
I mean, why don't they just do it week 1?
Their intention is to try to get all of the division games done as close to as neatly as possible. Because, again, if you have 6 games against your division, you can guarantee the 3-3.
Well, what if they do hey, Fox Big Noon kickoff for the college football season, Ohio State, Michigan.
They might. But I don't know.
You know, you say 3-3. I wonder how important is that if there are no fans in the stands anyway? Like, what's the big draw of saying I got 3 home games if you have 0 fans mm-hmm. and there's not necessarily a competitive disadvantage to playing on the road other than you have to go there?
The going.
Yeah, I mean, I guess
there would be a desire to treat everybody the same in terms of their travel protocols.
I think
there could be fans. I don't know how many.
I think it's sure that's possible. To me, it's just I don't think we can look at it in a normal season and be like, man, you know, they played only 2 home and 4 away. Like in a normal season, that'd be tough. But I just think it's different this year.
Well, the other thing, though, too, is even if there's not fans in the stadium, there will be fans around the stadium. And, like, they will go buy things outside of the stadium, or they will go to restaurants near the stadium, or they will – you know what I mean? Like, I think that there will be some type of economic advantage to having some home games rather than
– There's a neatness to having the division games first, because – the biggest TV properties are Ohio State, Michigan, and Ohio State, Penn State. Those are the 2 biggest TV properties. And you want to put those in a place where they're going to go off so that your TV partners are happy. What's the 3rd biggest game in the Big Ten, TV-wise? Penn State, Michigan. What's the 4th? I'd have to look at the ratings from last year, but I got to think those were the 3 highest rated games. Ohio State, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State, Michigan.
playing each other, yeah.
And then what would have been next? Minnesota, Penn State? So you're going to have to go a ways before you find a game that doesn't involve those three teams.
Yeah, from a team. I almost said Penn State, Iowa.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I think the Iowa game was earlier in the season. I know it was a primetime game, but the Minnesota game was, you know, hot, well hyped. That's something I'll have to look at, what the ratings were. Why don't you guys talk amongst yourselves, and I'll try to find that real quickly.
I do think, though, very quickly, we can make this a very quick. Nebraska, Iowa, and warm weather would be a very nice change of pace.
It would.
It would be very – it would be Nebraska, Iowa, not on Thanksgiving. I think it'd be I've been doing some research in terms of the 1918 season, which is the last time a pandemic changed college football. Nebraska had a schedule for that season set up, and it got changed in the last minute. And the first call that Nebraska made was to the University of Iowa. Iowa came. It was the first game of the year. It was like October 5th. Iowa won. It was 12-0. But still, that'd be fun. That'd be nice to start that way, I think.
It's notable. Okay, so I've got some information here. So the Penn State-Iowa game was 3.7 million. Michigan State, this is giving an example of the draw that Ohio State is. Michigan State, Ohio State was 6.68 million. Now, granted, that was on ABC, but so was Penn State, Iowa. So they basically doubled the audience or came close to doubling the audience, the difference between Ohio State and not. The Ohio State, Nebraska game was 6.14 million. That was Nebraska's most involved game. Michigan, okay, Wisconsin, yeah, was 4.73. Yeah. So when you start going through this, what you start to see is that the big property is any game that Ohio State is involved in. And, yeah, those are game. So the Penn State Minnesota game was huge. It was 6.74 million. That was a big game of viewers and a 4.3 rating, which was huge. And ABC was really sharp to put that game on before LSU-Alabama instead of after. So they got a really good rating because it was the appetizer going into the big game.
Yeah.
So what do you make? Ohio State was 9.43 million viewers.
Sam, what do you make of other conferences kind of getting their panties in a wad about all this?
Well, I can't speak to my sense is those conferences are not ready to make any kind of decision, in part because there's a lot going on in those conferences as it relates to the virus going way up. Hard for anything to be done in Florida at this moment. Hard for anything to be done in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, South Carolina. And then I think the other part is they want to try to their TV especially in the SEC, the TV contract is different in the SEC. It's different. The SEC had long prioritized some of its biggest games in the opening four weekends of college football to begin with. So it had already done that. That's something it had already, you know, been working on for a long time. And then it always backloaded, as most people know, one of its non-conference games to like November. And so there was always this, like almost always there was this sense of, you know, if you had to throw a game away, you could throw that one away in November anyway. My guess is that the SEC wanted to wait a couple of weeks. It has a goofy deal with CBS and ESPN, sort of split contract. So there's probably things that the SEC has to work through. I think the Big Ten just moved really quickly. And I think, again, it was done for TV partners. I don't think this is about safety. I just don't. I think the Big Ten is betting that we're going to try to get as many games as possible. We're going to front load our contracts so that our TV partners are happy. We're going to try to recoup as much money as possible, and we are not going to waste one half second on Penn State, Ohio State, or Michigan. Remember, this is really important. Those three teams, their big non-conference games are on the road. The Big Ten does not control those games. Penn State's at Virginia Tech, Michigan's at Washington, Ohio State's at Oregon. By pulling out of those games, the Big Ten lost nothing. Now, if you reverse that story and Oregon and Washington and Virginia Tech were coming to those schools, I think it might have been a different story. But the Big Ten lost nothing. Their TV contract lost zero. All they're going to do is gain. And so it made sense for them to kind of make the move that they did. What's sad about it is not that they lost the Pac-12 games, but what's going to happen to the MAC, which had been a wonderful partner to the Big Ten. I mean, basically, the MAC every year was serving itself up as a sacrificial lamb for multiple programs. And every so often, a Northern Illinois would beat Nebraska, or Purdue would lose to Eastern Michigan or whatever. But it didn't happen that often. And the MAC had a really good relationship there, and it was symbiotic, you know? There's been some damn good coaches that have come from the MAC to the Big Ten. And they were exposed to the Big Ten in part because they were there. Urban Meyer didn't go directly from the MAC to the Big Ten, but, you know, P.J. Fleck did. And Fleck was – that's a great example. Of like,
Jeff Brom?
No. Western Kentucky is in a different league. That's right. But yeah, that's – it's similar in that way. So those are examples of, like – it's always been a really good relationship with that league, and now that relationship has been – that's been damaged. I don't think there's any question that it will be. And I'm sure the MAC will understand, but it's still a tough deal. I don't really – the FCS thing, I don't – you know, this is a good example of why Jim Delaney wanted to get away from the FCS games. And I think there's a couple of FCS opponents where you just really couldn't guarantee, you know. For example, the FCS opponent Nebraska played a couple years ago because they had to, because they lost the Akron game. I don't know that that program would have the money to do the kind of testing necessary. Bethune-Cookman. Monmouth, which I don't know. There's a small college in New York, New Jersey. I don't even know. New Jersey. Why Rutgers is playing them, I don't know. But those are some examples of schools where you're like, there might be some real testing disparities there. I don't know. I'm not convinced that there's going to be a season.
Me neither.
I think I sort of stepped forward, but I don't know that it was definitive.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing we haven't really gotten into is just by doing that, you really open yourself up to potential litigation, right? I mean, this the first student athlete that tests positive and is hospitalized for this thing, like. I don't know what the legal contracts are for stuff like that, but nobody wants to be liable for that. I mean, that could bankrupt you. So there's the optics aspect. There's the legal aspect. There's flexibility, student athlete safety. I mean, there are a lot of reasons to be treading lightly for sure.
I think part of this was the Big Ten dipping their toe and saying, kind of throwing out there too of like, hey, do you think we should play football? And just kind of see what the reaction was.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, there's more.
You know, you shouldn't play football. It depends on
maybe.
Fans want it.
Twitter
media does not want it. So it depends on who you listen to.
Right. Like, I think that
university presidents don't. Do they listen to fans? They listen to the bottom line, you know, the financial piece. But do they listen to fans? Is that important to them? Do they understand the cultural value of football? Or are they worried about, you know, what a handful of media outlets might say?
Well, I don't care about media outlets. I think in general, the general thought of...
They do.
Sure. I mean, that's not my point. My point is I think that they are testing a test balloon, which people do, right. Of, hey, what do you think about playing football? Because I think 3 weeks ago, there was a significantly more optimism. There was more optimism that football could be done in a safe way and that it would be culturally acceptable. And right now, that is not the case, at least based on... people that I've talked to and reaction from regular fans.
Yeah,
I think
fair.
Now it's much different. And I think that this in a way lets them test the waters of what it would look like. And at the same time though, it's still, you know, a month or two away, but I think that this is a nice, I mean, I think seriously over the last 3 weeks, even the most, you know, rabid Husker football fans I've seen or talked to have said, yeah, there's not going to be a season. Even though they've said, hey, there's a 10 game season or conference right. only. I think it's an interesting test tube for what's happening right now.
The real question for me is if the Big Ten decides to put the kibosh before the season even begins and say, you know, we just can't do it. will the league free up its member institutions to create a coalition of the willing and say, you know what, we'll play our own games. You don't need to worry about us. We're Nebraska. We're going to play Wyoming, South Dakota State, Montana, Kansas, whomever we want to play. Would the Big Ten be willing to free up its institutions to do what they want? And that to me is sort of the final frontier question that I don't think anybody really wants to get to, but I still think it's a possibility on the table. We could get here to August 10th in a month and the Big Ten could say, sorry, we can't do it. Cases just going up too much in Ohio and Illinois and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, and we're pulling out. And Nebraska's like, well, we're good here, so we want to play. You gonna let us play? And I think that'll be an interesting moment. That'll be an interesting moment. It's gonna be an interesting, because I'll tell you right now, BYU, they play. BYU's just lost two games. They lost Minnesota and Michigan State, I think.
For historical context.
And they're going to lose a lot of games. So there's teams that will play. You just got to figure this stuff out. It's going to be tricky.
For historical context, Nebraska was in the Missouri Valley in 1918. And in 1918, they said, we're not having football. Do what you want. And Nebraska played two Army bases, Iowa, Kansas, and Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. So they figured it out then.
Well, they did. And we live in different times.
Didn't play the entire month of October because everything was shut down because of the Spanish flu. But
that's right.
And the question too is, where does the possibility of a spring season fit into that? Is that more palatable to the powers that be than everyone for themselves?
Well, when you add that component to it, maybe, I don't know. The chances of there being a spring football season are very slim. I don't see that being and for one of the reasons, again, nobody's going to say the quiet part out loud. Your TV contract's not going to look the same in the spring. It just won't. If you vacate now and you find yourself up against the NBA and Major League Baseball and college basketball, your contracts are not going to – you do not want college football squaring off against college basketball. You don't want that. Ideally, you'd get this done now. And I know that people are like, well, money versus lives. I'm not saying that. I am saying that it's that part is unlikely. It's not likely to be safer from a vaccine perspective or from a coronavirus perspective unless the virus reacts the complete opposite to normal viruses do in the winter and there's a vaccine, which who knows. And then on top of that, what do you do about 2021? You're seriously going to play the kids for 10 games in the spring, and then you're going to bring them back 2 months later and, you know, beat the shit out of them for another 12? Like, come on, it's not realistic. So I think the whole let's move to spring is like a punt. It's like we just hope this punt lands somewhere where we feel better. But I don't think they really want to do it in the spring. I really don't.
So do you think that there's a better chance there's no season at all than there is a spring football season?
Well, I think they would try to give it a try in the spring if they had to. Sure. People want to recoup it, but that's going to be very, very hard. Because if you begin the season in the spring, then you're beginning in mid-March. You're not beginning in January. Why would the conditions be better in January than it will be on September 5th? I mean, you're just forcing more people inside. So more people will be inside. I don't know. I don't have a good answer as to like how you get out of the current virus mess. I haven't paid close enough attention to know exactly what variables are behind the sharp spike in cases. I know the median age is going down, so that means that more and more younger people are getting it. And then you have to make a supposition about what younger people are doing to spread it so quickly. And I'm not sure that I can – I'm not sure who's making that supposition or how. I mean, I don't know. And then you have to look at, well, you know, once that happens, can you protect the most vulnerable population from getting it while young people, you know, burn through it? And then you have to figure out – so even if young people are getting it, and a lot of them don't have symptoms, then why are the cases going up so much? And why are the hospitalization rates going up? Is this more dangerous among people who are 20, 30, and 40 than we know? There's all these other variables that I think it's just so hard to unravel. It's very hard. It'd take all day. So, and we don't have a great data tracking project. I know there's one out there, and it's okay. But that project also has its own ideations and what it wants to accomplish with this project, which is imperfect. You know, it has an aim. And it would be better if there was a data tracking project that didn't have any sort of ideological attachments to it. So it's not good times. It's hard stuff. I'm tired of writing about the pandemic, but we're going to keep doing it. Chris, how is the pandemic affecting the potential of Nebraska basketball team to have its whole team together?
Ivan and Thor continue to be overseas, and they don't know how to get them back. Well, but it's not that they don't know how to get them back. They're unable to get them back.
Got to get back!
So Ivan can jump now. Did you see that?
Yeah.
His head.
His head.
The rim.
It's good news. It's a lot different in a game, but it's a super good. This is why you get a kid that's 17 years old, because he can drop some weight and become more athletic over the 12 months. But yeah. It's also really, I mean, he posted some videos on Instagram as well of just what the workout situation looks like in France. France is doing significantly better than the United States with coronavirus right now. So he's able to work out in almost, you could argue, better conditions than he would here. He's got like a full gym of trainers and nobody's wearing a mask because there's essentially no cases in France anymore, or significantly less, I guess I should say. But he it remains in France. Thor remains in Iceland. They don't really know when they're going to be able to come back. Up to U.S. governments. So that's kind of where it still stands. There is starting to become a slight worry that they might not be able to come back before the semester begins. That's just based on, you know, naturally. I mean, the semester begins in mid-August. Things need to drastically change in the United States for potential bans on travel to go down. And so that's starting to seep in. The news really this week with that, it was essentially the ICE said that if you were an international student in the United States and you were enrolled in a school that was doing online only classes, you either needed to go back to your home country or enroll in a university that had in-person classes. And that situation is a little worrisome, obviously, because Nebraska has quite a few international students that are even on campus, two from Canada, one that was born in London. You got Thor, you got Ivan, obviously. There are universities, though, that are essentially creating a one credit hour international student class that is mandatory in person. Therefore, students could be required to be on campus to go to that class, so they wouldn't have to go home or anything like that. So I don't think that Nebraska is particularly worried about that situation. I would also be somewhat surprised if that actually went into practice, just based on the significant reaction to that news. But it's worth following. I think in general, still, the basketball team is going to be pretty quiet for the next couple months, I think. I mean, they're working out. Practices can start in late July. But even then, they'll still just continue to do smaller groups and work on their game. I think college basketball is headed toward, like, within all this conversation, about Big Ten conference only and all these things, it wouldn't surprise me if basketball was conference only as well, and they started in January and also eradicated non-conference.
No Creighton?
That would be big. Yeah, I know. That'd actually be a pretty big deal. But
oh, yeah.
You either have Creighton, I have an extremely hard time envisioning a scenario in which Nebraska and Creighton play a basketball game in front of fans. And that's going to be really hard to pull off. And I think the Big Ten doesn't really care about that game Like, the Big Ten doesn't really care about Nebraska basketball in
some ways. They care about the Big Ten ACC Challenge, though.
They do. Yes, they do. I agree.
Nuke at Indiana or whatever the hell.
Mm-hmm. They do.
That matters.
It does. But, I mean, I think, you know, Rick Pitino obviously is the one that floated it on Twitter. But I had heard it before he did that. And just based on conversations I've had over the last couple of weeks, it sounds like that's going to be something that's going to be seriously looked at. You also, I mean, it's a different situation than football too, right? I mean, you're inside, which obviously being outside has been advantageous for lessening, you know, not having as much spread. You're also in pretty close contact, not that you're not with football, but pretty close contact. You also have like a lot of elderly coaches, which is a weird thing to say, but like a lot. And they're going to be hyper aware of it. You also, I mean, Fred Hoiberg has a heart condition, and I know that, you know, whenever everything broke, he was told by his doctor, do not leave your house. You're like, stay home. And so there's going to be a hyper awareness to that as well. So I don't – obviously the announcement about football doesn't directly impact men's basketball, but men's basketball starts in November and goes through November and December, and so I think it wouldn't shock me – particularly if we're talking about like, you know, they're going to move division football games early so that they can get those just in case something happens. And I think as long as there's a just in case, or if there's, you know, still, we're still talking about potentially the football season not going all the way through, then I think that they're not going to even entertain non-conference basketball games. And they're just going to push it to January. It's also kind of a clean cut because typically, you know, you go to an 18 or 20 game season between January and March and you're good to go. So that's kind of what's going on in the basketball world. It's still fairly quiet.
Hmm.
What?
We'll see. That's hard. The indoor part, that's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough.
I don't know. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Can't play them outside, really. Not in the winter. They tried the aircraft carrier, and that wasn't good.
Where's the wind going?
Horrible idea. I mean, you could.
The court was wet, wasn't it? It was like rippling.
It was windy. Yeah, that was a bad idea for many reasons. I mean, I tell you what, dudes would play. I mean, dudes would play, and I think Nebraska would have a pretty good outside basketball team. I think they'd be pretty good.
Yeah,
Kobe Webster worked out in a bar.
I mean, a little cold, though.
Cold outside. Should have been playing in more windy conditions. Would have even been
up. I'm just trying to imagine, like, Ames, Iowa. Because Ames is, like, 5 degrees colder than Lincoln all the time.
Yeah.
You'd have to, like, you know, like, Madison, Wisconsin. Like,
every TV timeout, the shovels come out, and you put a little more salt on the ground.
It's so cold. Nebraska got a commit from Lardarius Webb Jr. Evan, what do you think of this guy? What do you know about him? He's the son of Lardarius Webb. Lardarius Webb, the R is kind of silent there. Who's a cornerback in the NFL. But this is his son. He didn't have a recruiting ranking. I don't know why. Did they not know he existed? Whatever. So maybe you can fill us in there and then tell us what you know about the kid.
Yeah, he didn't. Not only did he not have a ranking, he didn't have a recruiting profile on any of the recruiting sites.
That's great.
And until, you know, he commits to Nebraska, then within like 5 or 6 hours, he's a 3-star recruit everywhere. So, you know,
I guess he's a 3-star.
He must be, right? So, you know, he was a guy who got an offer a couple weeks earlier. It seemed like initially he wanted to take his visits, but that thing came together pretty quickly. I mean, he told me Nebraska was still his only offer at that point. And so he wanted to go ahead and pull the trigger. And he said, I don't need any copycats. They saw something in me. And now other people are talking to me. I don't need them. So he commits to Nebraska. You know, his film's pretty good. He's a good tackler. He's a hard hitter. Good footwork. And in the, I think, 4 or 5 minutes, his huddle film shows from his junior season. But, you know, as I put my takes of the thing, to me, what was interesting about his recruitment was that Nebraska would take him right now as someone who you know, isn't necessarily ballyhooed within the industry. Eric Chenander came across him. He recruits Alabama. And then Travis Fisher kind of took it from there. And, you know, Webb's 5'10". He's a little bit shorter than the DBs that Fisher has brought in the last three cycles. So I thought that was notable. But, you know, you can kind of look back on some of the DBs Fisher has brought in. Not all of them have been, you know, touted guys. Taman Lynam recently was a guy who didn't have a ton of offers. Ronald Delancey, Miles Farmer didn't either in the last couple cycles. And, you know, it's fair to say that we don't know how it'll turn out with those guys. So we don't necessarily know that, you know, these are all diamonds in the rough necessarily. But what it does say is that Nebraska is confident in its own evaluations. You know, it's how many times have we seen Nebraska offer a kid and then another school or two offer the day after that? You know, they did it at a lot of positions too. Logan Smothers was a good recent example of someone they were in way early on. So they're not afraid to put those offers out there. They did that with Webb. And in this case, he commits right away. So I think he's going to be an interesting kind of exhibit in a few years when you see how his career unfolds to say, you know, one way or the other, as far as how well does Nebraska's coaching staff evaluate talent, especially just on video, since they didn't have the benefit of an in-person evaluation of him. So he's commit number 12, first DB in the class. You got to think they're going to take at least a couple more before this cycle's done. And, you know, if it looks like Nebraska's going to take roughly 20 guys in this class, they're already up to 12 now. So you have to start getting a little more picky. And as we've talked about with the recruiting shutdowns related to the pandemic, you know, it's going to be really interesting, especially if this thing, this dead period gets extended through September, as it seems more and more likely to do. You're going to have to see these kids really start committing sight unseen to a lot of places. And, you know, I would imagine these commitments are just going to start picking up here soon.
Mm. So one thing the NCAA does control is that recruiting calendar.
But I mean, do you see, I don't see any way that they open this thing up soon. The way things are trending with college football and the scheduling, like we've talked about, doesn't make a ton of sense, does it? You don't even know when the games are at this point. How can you have a recruiting visit when you don't even know what your schedule is anymore? It seems like it's trending toward virtual.
Yeah. What's going on? I go back and forth on it, you know. Again, you're getting into this weird place of, if a kid wants to go on a visit somewhere, let him go on the visit. Like, what? That's between the kid, his family, and the school. The official visit piece is tricky. I get that. You know, but unofficial visits, if a kid wants to pay his own way to go down to see a school, I'm not sure what is unfair about a school receiving that guy and, you know, and talking to him. I just don't know. The official visit piece, I understand, because there's some places that will be at a disadvantage based on the coronavirus pandemic at that moment. But, you know, when it's an unofficial visit, it's essentially a kid making a choice to pay his own way to go to a place. And I mean, who are we to say that person can't make that choice? We'll see where it goes. I don't know. And there's kids that are already now doing it. Well, I'm going to go take it on. I'm just going to go on my own and go walk around the campus. Right? There's mm-hmm. kids doing that now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they are. So he can't go talk to the coach because of pandemic? Like, I don't know. I don't know how that interfaces. I just don't know. So I'm sure maybe we'll see how the discussion goes. I don't think kids should be making uninformed decisions because they're not allowed to do anything more than talk to a coach over a phone. Sometimes I think you do need to see things in order to kind of see if this is what you really want. You have to be able to see a facility. You have to be able to see, you know, you have to be able to meet some of the players on the team. And I know that you can do that over Zoom. They're doing that, but it's still challenging. You know, you want to be able to be in a place. It would be hard to move someplace where you knew nothing about it except for what you saw over a computer screen. That'd be tough. And people do it all the time, don't get me wrong. But it'd still be kind of weird.
Lardarius Webb Sr. was a 10-year veteran in the NFL, and he played at Nicholls State. Mm-hmm. So he initially played at Southern Miss, started there, then transferred to Southern Nicholls, and played option quarterback and defensive back and all those things. He wasn't a big guy. He was 5'10", 185. So he wasn't much bigger than his son.
And incidentally, he's the son is moving. He played his junior year of high school football in Alabama. He's moving to Jackson, Mississippi to live with his dad for his senior year so he can be closer to him and live with him essentially and be coached up by him.
Is this guy an Alabama recruit or a Jackson, Mississippi recruit?
Well, he'll play his senior year in Mississippi, so technically that's where he'll be. But honestly, you know, he strikes me as one of those guys, just kind of those football lifer types, you know. Yeah. We've talked about it before with – I always think of it when I put a Super 6 together about just kind of that intangible quality, like the Garrett Nelsons of the world or the Ronald Delanceys of the world. I feel like Webb is one of those kind of guys who's just like lives and breathes football, the kind of guy that Husker coaches are always talking about. And so, you know, that kind of thing can pay off in a big way. And when your dad is a guy who has a Super Bowl ring and was the man in the NFL for a long time, sometimes, and he said this, like he's motivated to make his own name. So he's not the son of so-and-so. He's Lardarius Webb Jr. He's his own guy. So he strikes me as a guy who's especially motivated moving forward. So it should be fun to watch.
I'm just looking at your Super 6 from last year. Omar Manning, Logan Smothers, Keyshawn Green, Turner Corcoran, Nash Nutmaker, Ron Delancey.
Not all of those were huge leaps, but, you know, Delancey was a guy I don't think a lot of people chose. And
no, I did, but, yeah, not a lot of people chose him. I had Smothers, Green, Manning, Delancey, Fleming, Corcoran, Feldarius Payne as my sleeper. Your sleeper was Alante Brown.
And, yeah, sleeper's a –
yeah, it's a relative term. Alante Brown was a pretty good player. So it's like, but yeah, it's a good. Valdarius Payne's one of those guys that loves football, isn't he?
He is. He was a fun guy to talk to too. His path to Nebraska is pretty winding. The part of his story that stands out to me that you got to think all recruits could learn from was the academic piece, where he thought he was going to the military, and so he didn't really care all that much about his grades because he figured it didn't matter. And so when football became an option and these schools started coming around, it was embarrassing for him. Like he said, North Carolina coaches showed up. They were at his game. They were interested. They heard about his grades and they walked out. You watch him walk out. Like that stays with a guy. And to his credit, he's turned it around since then. But, you know, you got to love those stories. And speaking of junior college, you know, that's the other piece of this recruiting thing we haven't really touched on, but looking like that's going to probably be official on Monday, that they're pushing their fall sports competitions to the spring.
Yeah.
So that works with junior college football recruiting. My goodness gracious. Where do you even begin?
It's tough. You know, the thing that really hurt JUCOs was a lot of the offers would come off that spring evaluation period. So they'll go out in April, early May, and they'll have – I mean, they do a great job of – the junior colleges do a great job of handling, you know, coaches coming through, and they'll usually manage it then. And then you'll get some extra offers based off playing tape. So not that it doesn't matter, but a lot of times your offers come from those spring evaluations. Those were gone. So I'm guessing they were hoping for playing tape, and it doesn't look like there's going to be any of that either. That stinks. I feel for a state like Kansas, where they have great junior college football tradition in Kansas. The situation in Kansas is not awful. I mean, I don't know, you know, you want to say that the right way, but if you're just talking total cases per 1 million of population, Kansas is way down the list. It's just not as serious a problem as a lot of states. Yeah. Unfortunately, looks like they're going to get stuck, and it, you know, and it's tough for Iowa Western too. It's if they're caught in that too, because you know Iowa Western's got a different, more advanced setup than some junior colleges might.
Yeah, very quickly, I will say too, it does. as somebody who's gone to a handful of Western Nebraska Community College basketball games as of the last couple of years, it does hurt my heart a little bit thinking about, I mean, the reason why Teddy Allen is at Nebraska is because of him in the first semester of this, of his basketball career, of when he was at Western. I mean, Nebraska went out and talked to him and saw him play, and Teddy needed that entire year to kind of mature himself. And so it hurts to just think about all the kids basketball wise who, if, you know, you only have so much film, and that's kind of how you get noticed on the basketball world, JUCO world, and to kind of get the season, maybe get split in half. Like that's too bad. So that's, I hope that basketball is as impacted as football. But it looks like it will be. And it's too bad. Cause it's like pure college. Like that's what college sports are about. It's kind of making an opportunity in college on the JUCO level. So it's too bad that might happen.
Agreed. It's a good point. Well, I think we've reached the end of our line for this week. Still a lot to be figured out, but yeah, you guys did a great job covering this yesterday, and I'm sure there'll be more that comes out over the next couple of weeks. No field turf in Memorial Stadium, either.
Nope, they postponed it. They said so. Part of the deal. Same one this year, if there are games.
When's the last time they replaced it?
About 5 or 6 years ago, I think, something like that.
Yeah, it wears out pretty fast.
Yeah.
I say go to grass. I do.
All right, I know.
I like grass.
All right.
Me too.
Fans. Fun week ahead. I'll be back next week. Chris Evan, are you both in next week too?
Mm-hmm. We are full strength, baby.
Finally. It's like the Power Rangers coming together. All right. Thanks for everything, guys, and we'll see you next week.